Hey y'all, Scott Horton here. After the show, you should check out one of my sponsors, WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by Mike Swanson, a former hedge fund manager who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Mike's site, WallStreetWindow.com, is unique in that he shows people what he's really investing in, updating you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike's betting his positions are going to go up due to the Federal Reserve printing all that money to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. In an empire where Congress knows nothing, the ubiquitous D.C. think tank is all. And the Israel lobby and their neocon allies must own a dozen. Well, Americans have a lobby in Washington, too. It's called the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They advocate for us on Capitol Hill. Join CNI to demand an end to the U.S.-sponsored occupation of the Palestinians and an end to our government's destructive empire in the Middle East. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit, Dagny & Lane, at dagnyandlane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. Hey folks, Scott Horton here for Veterans for Peace at veteransforpeace.org. I'm not a vet, but if you are, I'd like to ask you to consider joining Veterans for Peace. As you know, in matters of foreign wars, a veteran's voice is given much more weight. Well, Veterans for Peace is making veterans' voices heard in ways and places where they can really make a difference. There are more than 175 chapters of Veterans for Peace in all 50 states, working hard to eliminate nuclear weapons, seek justice for veterans and victims of war, and abolish war as an instrument of American national policy. It's the peace vets versus the chicken hawks. Join up the good fight at veteransforpeace.org. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest is Adam Morrow from Interpress Service. Live on the phone from Cairo, Egypt. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Good, Scott. Thanks. Thanks. Good to be back.
Good. Well, very happy to have you here. So I'll read you one short paragraph from Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com here. Massive numbers of protesters, by some estimates 100,000 or more, marched on Egypt's presidential palace in Cairo, storming the outer gates and entering the grounds of the compound, forcing President Mohamed Morsi to flee. Wow. So, update us. What's going on?
Sure. Yeah. Well, unprecedented chaos and the dangers of further escalations today. I don't know if you're following by the minute, but we've got clashes have actually erupted between these protesters, these anti-Morsi protesters, and much larger groups of supporters of the president who have come out and hit the streets. And the two of them have met in the precincts of the presidential palace. And at least one or two deaths have been reported now, as there have been reports of stone throwing and then Molotov cocktails, and now people are hearing, people are reporting shotgun blasts. So things are looking extremely tenuous here right now. After a period of sort of relative calm for the last couple of months, it looks like things are heating up again, and really the future has never been less certain here in Egypt, unfortunately.
All right, now, I guess when we talked last week, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? I think it was last week.
Yeah, it was 10 days ago maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the anti-Morsi protesters were starting to come out then, and it was a wait and see what happens when the pro-Muslim Brotherhood guys come out, something like that. Now you're telling me that the anti group showed up. They stormed the palace, forced him out, but then later the pro-Muslim Brotherhood factions showed up in even greater numbers?
That's right. That's right. Just to give us a little bit of background, we had about 2 weeks ago, we had the announcement of the president, we had the announcement of this constitutional declaration that basically gave the basically gave the president's decisions immunity from any sort of judicial challenge because he was afraid that the Supreme Constitutional Court here was about to pass more rulings against democratically elected institutions, including the Shura Council, as well as the Constituent Assembly, which had been tasked with writing a draft constitution which, by the way, is expected to be put before a popular referendum, supposedly is meant to go before a popular referendum on 15th December. That announcement by the president, who felt that he had been pushed into a corner by the judiciary, by a judiciary that many perceive as still being stocked with Mubarak loyalists, that declaration sort of galvanized the opposition, brought you know, elements still loyal to the Mubarak regime, together with liberal and leftist forces, and they came out in force big time about 2 weeks ago, about 10 days ago, staged a massive rally in Tahrir Square, staged a subsequent rally a couple of days later, and certainly brought at least 100,000 people into the square. A couple of days later, though, on Saturday, that was the last Saturday, you saw a counter-demonstration by Islamist forces and supporters of Mohammed Morsi, staging demonstrations in the area far from Tahrir Square. They wanted to avoid clashes. They wanted to avoid escalations. So they staged a separate counter-demonstration near Cairo University, which was at least a million people from what I understand. So he's certainly not without popular support. The latest developments, you had, I think it was yesterday, people started to move to the presidential palace. You had another one of these massive anti-Morsi demonstrations move to the presidential palace. You had police withdraw. You had the president leave the palace. You had reports of vandalism. As like you said, these guys started crashing through gates and this sort of thing. And then finally today, you have yet another counter demonstration by Islamists and supporters of the president converging on the presidential palace, apparently breaking up a bunch of some sit-ins that had been going on there, and basically coming out in support of the president. This has led to clashes now that are ongoing as we speak. It looks like that we can expect more violence. The future of the constitutional referendum is up in the air. You've had a couple resignations by presidential aides, by high level presidential aides coming out and say and basically abandoning Morsi. And you've also had several judges coming out. You've had large swaths of judges coming out saying that they would refuse to oversee the referendum. So the president has never ever been in a tighter situation. He's only been in the presidency for 6 months now, but this is certainly by far and away the biggest challenge he's had to face thus far.
Mm-hmm. Well, boy, there's so much to talk about going on here. I guess first of all, most important thing is, from what you've described so far, with these different factions showing up at these protests, doesn't sound like everybody's showing up with guns and that kind of thing, at least yet. But what about the cops and the soldiers?
That's a very, very good question, and it's something that I feel has really gone underreported here, because I'd just like to also say that the reporting of everything that's going on is so incredibly politicized here, at least in terms of the local press. You've got the entire country is polarized between the two sides, so it's very difficult to tell fact from fiction. You know, violence will break out, and each side will immediately blame the other. It's extremely difficult to verify who actually started things. On top of that, you have the very strange behavior by police and security agencies, which has been a characteristic of the last couple of months, so strongly suggesting that the presidency and the Muslim Brotherhood are far from being in control of security agencies and police. You've had incidences where their offices have been attacked, not the Muslim Brotherhood's offices, but the offices of its party, Freedom and Justice Party, have been attacked by anti-Morsi protesters, and police never showed up to protect them. They say that they called several times for police help, and the police simply never showed up to help them out. So you have this very strange, you know, the police are sort of a wild card at this point. You know, they've kind of gone rogue, and it's very hard to tell whose side they're on. There are certainly very, very strong indications that they are not following instructions coming from the presidency, that they're disappearing at times when they're needed, that they're not around when, for example, they withdrew from the presidential palace and these protesters just were sort of allowed to march into the gates. So this is extremely, extremely worrisome. And then on top of that, you definitely have the existence of some kind of third party. It's very difficult to get a bead on exactly who they are. But there are definitely elements out there that are trying to sow chaos and trying to sow violence. Even before the latest problems with this constitutional declaration 2 weeks ago, even before that, you had these running street battles with young kids, basically, totally politically unaffiliated, who would just sort of randomly attack police in downtown Cairo. There have been a lot of reports and a lot of evidence to suggest that these kids are being paid by someone, basically just to start trouble and to keep this low level, you know, this low intensity instability going on. So it's really a power keg right now. It's very hard to tell what direction things are going to go in, given all of the moving parts right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, you know me, I don't know Arabic or anything, but I was reading Nancy Youssef in McClatchy, and she's a good reporter, and she had an analysis of the new Egyptian constitution, and it seemed like, you know, yeah, your rights are protected except where we choose otherwise. Sort of like the U.S. Constitution and the rest of them, too, basically, right? Other than ascertained by law, then that's the exception, of course, and all of this kind of deal.
Right.
So, and apparently a good part of the population is looking at this new constitution as a pretty cynical power grab, right? That's why they're out screaming about it, is because they don't trust the referendum. Maybe they don't have the votes to stop it, but they already hate it. I mean, do you agree with, first of all, that assessment of their feeling about it? And then are you saying that...
Sure.
Would you agree that the Constitution is actually a pretty cynical power grab on the part of Morsi and his friends?
Sure. Well, the entire Constitution drafting process from the very beginning has been dogged by controversy. It was a 100 member constituent assembly that was drawn up mainly by members of the parliament that was dissolved only days before the presidential election. And you had these several walkouts by liberal and leftist members. They were constantly walking out, and I mean, to my mind, it looked like they just simply wanted to stall the process. You had 25% of the constituent assembly were these hardcore Salafists, and they were willing to make several concessions on a number of issues, on a number of major social issues and otherwise. And yet the liberal and leftist members weren't really willing to sit down. At least that's what appears to me. I mean, I know a lot of people would probably take issue with that, saying that the Islamists were trying to dominate the drafting process. But it looked like a lot of these liberal and leftist members just really didn't give it a chance and just insisted on walking out, and then after walking out, turning around and saying, no, this constituent assembly is completely dominated by Islamists and is unrepresentative of the wider Egyptian society. In a sense, I think that no matter what constitution they came up with, I think the anti-Morsi people, the opponents of, you know, Morsi's critics and stuff, no matter what constitution they eventually arrived at, they were going to have a problem. They were going to reject it out of hand. When they had the chance to sort of stay in the assembly, work out their differences and to reach compromises, they chose not to. They chose to leave. And now they're complaining bitterly about a lot of the clauses in the Constitution. That being said, I also think there's a lot to suggest that if it was put to a vote, that it would pass overwhelmingly. Like they had a constitutional referendum last year, if you remember, to which the people followed the Islamist lead and voted overwhelmingly in support of it, as they said yes to it.
Right.
So I think Morsi's opponents right now know that if this thing does go to a vote, if they manage to ride out the current wave of problems and actually do manage to get it to a popular referendum on December 15th, which is only 10 days away, but it stands a very good chance of being overwhelmingly endorsed. I mean, maybe by 60 or 70%, maybe not overwhelmingly, but maybe by 60 or 70% margin.
Well, yeah, that would count as a supermajority, pretty,
pretty big deal.
Right. But now, that being said, there are certainly no doubt there are certainly elements of the Constitution that are open to criticism. The problem is the polarization is so deep that there's been very little room for compromise. There's been shown very little readiness to compromise. And in a more general sense, it sort of goes along with this whole idea that that even from the very beginning, despite having won a popular mandate in Egypt's first ever free presidential elections, Morsi and his administration were really never given the chance. And I've even heard, Morsi opponents admit this, basically saying that he and his administration were never really properly given a chance. I mean, they were obstacles were put up in front of them at absolutely every turn. Just like I said earlier, police not implementing his decisions. These state institutions dragging their feet in implementing his decisions. So it's very hard to tell, Scott.
Yeah. Well, I guess the worst way to look at this is it sounds a little bit like Iraq in 2005, where the Sunnis boycotted the election and then they lost everything, and that was what really precipitated the civil war more than anything else was the democracy. And I know in this case it's not a Sunni Shiite divide the way it was in Iraq and that kind of thing. It wasn't a fight for the capital city in the way that the Iraq war was. It's a very different situation, but it could be very dangerous when you have major minorities sit out the process, lose big, and then lose even bigger than that later. They lose out on the forming of the Constitution. They lose out on the new government that comes to power under the Constitution. They might start fighting about that, just protesting. I hate to see that.
Well, it did come off as very unreasonable, this idea that this refusal to sort of sit down as long as it took to hammer out a constitution that was mutually acceptable to all sides. All sides had to make concessions. The Salafists in the Constituent Assembly certainly made several concessions, as I made earlier. And it seemed like if the process had been given a legitimate chance, if people had genuinely sat down and tried to work things out, they could have come up with a mutually acceptable national charter. But like I said, you had these mass two rounds of walkouts. There were two different constituent assemblies. First one was struck down by court order. A second one was set up, and then the liberals and left again walked out, leaving them basically no choice. But to finish the constitution. I can tell you that the vast majority of Egyptians do want stability more than anything else. They would want to see all of this. You have this very emotional, highly charged political class hitting the streets all the time and occasionally engaging in these clashes. But this vast silent majority really wants all of this, to put all of this stuff behind them, wants to see an end to all of this post-revolution political turbulence and just, get things going back to normal again so people can get back to work, so the economy can get back up and running again, which is absolutely of paramount importance. So tourism can start functioning again. So you do have a lot, again, you do have this really, really big silent majority that nobody's really hearing of. You're just hearing of these supercharged Islamists and the supercharged opposition who are probably, at the end of the day, who are probably in a minority overall. When again, you talk to the average Egyptian on the street and they're like, look, this has just gone on long enough. Let's just pass a constitution. Let's just get a functioning parliament going. And this is another thing that should be pointed out. That Morsi's contentious declaration from two weeks ago that gave him power over the judiciary, that made his decisions immune from judicial challenge, that declaration will be canceled as soon as a constitution is approved.
Well, that's what he said anyway, right?
Parliamentary elections are held.
That's what he's promised anyway.
Sure. But since in post-revolution Egypt, you always have the opportunity where if the president reneges on a promise like that, the people do have the Tahrir Square option. And the leaders here are very, very aware that, if from now on, after January 25th, 2011, if enough people have a problem politically, they still always have the option of hitting the streets again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's that too. Well, and there's the whole thing too about, I mean, if it's really true that the majority of the population of the country really does support the Muslim Brotherhood and this Constitution and the government, I mean, assuming the Constitution is put up for vote and is ratified.
It's not necessarily support of the Muslim Brotherhood, but there is the idea that this guy was elected in Egypt's first ever, you know, this is the first time Egyptians have chosen their head of state in the history of Egyptian civilization, which is an incredible landmark. So there is this idea that he does enjoy popular legitimacy because of elections, and you know, there's also the idea that a lot of folks went out and they voted in parliamentary elections late last year. They voted for their people. A lot of money was spent on campaigning, a lot of time and effort, and then the judiciary, ruled against the constitutionality of the parliament and had that dissolved. So, I mean, there was a legal reason behind it, but the ruling also only applied to one third of the parliament. So there was this idea that could have dissolved one third and held re-elections again, but instead they stuck in the elected parliament. And that's, people don't like that. People don't like going out after a revolution, electing an institution or electing a head state and then seeing that elected institution or elected head of state overturned or challenged by an unelected judiciary from the Mubarak era.
Yeah. Well, you know, assuming that the Constitution is put into effect and Morsi does give up the powers that he promised to give up, which I'm skeptical of any politician ever doing that in any circumstance. So I guess, you know, we'll see how much. Maybe he will have to in order to continue getting by in the world. But then, you know, these people who have walked out and refuse to participate in the Constitution, it seems like it's going to depend on the people who have won out to be gracious and give them a third and a fourth chance and a fifth chance, and maybe the Constitution does need some rewriting, and maybe they need to, extend a little bit of more than they have to in order to, bring these people on board eventually.
Oh, sure.
It's better than having people in.
It's absolutely essential to go that extra mile and to sort of reach out even after you've vanquished your enemy to keep him on board. I agree completely. And I mean, cases can be made for or against, the efforts that Morsi has made, in order to get people on board.
I gotta say, I read his interview with Time Magazine, and the guy seemed like a total kook to me. And now maybe part of it is just English as a second language, but nah, because some of it was translated too. And he seemed like, he was pretty bonkers. I don't know, what all that means. He didn't seem downright evil. I mean, he's a politician after all, but he seemed like kind of a nut, honestly.
Well, okay, some of that can be attributed to translation, because they did translate what he said literally, and it did sound a little bit.
Well, some of it they said was him talking in English, but of course, he's not from here, so.
Right. Okay. Bear in mind that he's sort of the accidental president. He's Egypt's accidental president. Because if you remember, the Brotherhood originally wanted a guy named Khayr al-Shatir to be their presidential candidate, and he's very charismatic and he's a great speaker and et cetera, and they couldn't, because of certain legal issues prevented them from fielding him as their presidential candidate. So they ended up fielding Mohamed Morsi, who certainly doesn't have the appeal that their choice had. That being said, though, he does speak in a way, he speaks like normal Egyptians. He doesn't speak like a politician, and I think that has gone some way. People used to say that about George W. Bush. I couldn't really understand why, because he just sounded mentally challenged when he would speak. I mean, he had trouble putting together a sentence, that guy George Bush, and I think his whole folksy Texan thing is kind of contrived, whereas Morsi is more legitimate. Morsi really does have a sort of is sort of the people, and I think that does work in his favor to some extent, and at the same time it does open him up to criticism from his detractors when he says something silly. At the same time, though, it's I don't think it's entirely fair to judge someone who's speaking in a language that isn't their first language.
Yeah, well, that's true, and especially as reported by Time Magazine, you can't trust
them. Exactly,
that's
another thing. Like, I was wondering, I read some of the transcripts as well, and I was kind of shocked by how silly he sounded in many cases. But I also wonder if I don't trust these mainstream media organizations at all. I think it might have been within their interest to try to make him look silly, and I wonder if they weren't just sort of just sort of talk, like he didn't realize that what he was saying was going to run in their newspaper. I wonder, that all the talking about Planet of the Apes, like, that sounded to me like they were just, you know, kind of shooting the shit there for a while, and they just wrote down everything he said
right.
and ended up publishing it. So
right.
I don't trust their move either. That's a good point.
Yeah. All right. Well, hell, we're already over time, but can I ask you a couple more things here real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So the United States seems to be getting along just fine with Qatar and Saudi Arabia and their support for the Muslim Brotherhood and other Sunni revolutionaries in Syria right now. And, of course, we've talked before about the semi-ancient history of CIA friendliness with the Muslim Brotherhood back in,
right.
you know, at least the 70s, that kind of thing, whatever. But it seems like, and of course, you know, he's got a pretty conciliatory tone. He certainly doesn't seem to be trying to strike a very independent from, you know, now hear this. We have a new, more independent from America policy than before sort of a tone, you know, nothing like that.
Sure, and they're accepting a huge $5 billion loan from the IMF, too, which is also questionable.
Right, there you go. So, I mean, and basically, and I think we may have talked about this from the very beginning, which is that Egypt is terribly dependent on American wheat for the people to eat. And so that's about
right.
the end of that. No political government there. I mean, it's part of being a small state compared to a superpower is, you know, you're either outright enemy of the empire or you got to go along. And in this case,
right.
they basically have to go along. But I just wonder whether, you know, go ahead and be as cynical as you can. Do you think that Egypt has gained any independence from the empire at all since the fall of Mubarak? Or is everything pretty much Muslim Brotherhood might as well be the old military regime as far as that goes?
Well, there are two lines of thought on this. One of them is that the Brotherhood is in fact co-opted and is working in cahoots with the United States to implement this post-revolution turnover where it would seem that things would change and it would seem that Egypt would have an independent the maker of its own destiny when in fact the deal had actually been struck and you know Egypt would sort of be allowed to do certain things up to a certain point you know that they would be allowed to function and appear independent as long as they didn't cross certain red lines that had been set for them by the U.S. Now that's one line of thought that's been embraced by many of Morsi's detractors that these guys aren't sincere about taking on America and serving the will of the Egyptian people as opposed to Washington's dictates like Mubarak used to do. Now at the same time though. A case could be made that America and possibly Israel are part of this counter-revolution, that's part of all this anti-Morsi activity that's going on. Like I said before, there's a lot of indications that there are, I'd say it's beyond indications, I would say there's certainly evidence that there are elements here in Egypt that are working desperately to destabilize Egypt and make him look bad, make his administration look like a failure from the very beginning. And I mean, now is that being conducted by just these rogue Mubarak loyalists who still exist, who just want to take down the Brotherhood, or is this something that's being supported by abroad, specifically by the U.S. or the CIA, or it's, you know, in the case of Iran post-70, is this a counter-revolution that's basically being administered or directed from the U.S. embassy entirely? And this still remains, this remains a big question mark. I suspect the latter is the case. I suspect the Muslim Brotherhood may be co-opted to a certain degree. I mean, maybe they have some questionable elements inside of it, but that for the most part, it is legitimate. It is a legitimate reflection of the popular will here, and that is something that is unacceptable to the empire, especially in a country as important to Egypt geostrategically. This is another thing people tend to forget, that Egypt is totally different from Tunisia and totally different from most other Arab states, in that it is by far the biggest in terms of population, that it controls the Suez Canal, which is of vital importance to global navies and to commercial traffic, and last but not least, it's a confrontation state, a so-called confrontation state with Israel, in that it shares a border with Israel, and for that reason cannot be allowed under any circumstances to go its own way. But again, it's really hard to tell with information and news reporting so unreliable, so politicized. It's very difficult to tell.
Okay, and now, lastly, we haven't really focused on this that much since the very beginning, but it seems implicit in this conversation that you think that the storming of the of the palace there, and Morsi having to flee is really just a temporary thing and really represents no big deal long term to his government.
This is another thing. I was saying before about the unprecedented chaos and danger and everything looming over Egypt. It's extremely scary. At the same time, it is true that the situation will be contained, that they will manage to, they will ride this out, and that they will manage to put the referendum to vote, the constitution to a referendum, and that it will pass. And then they will then subsequently, within 1 or 2 months, they will hold fresh legislative elections, and they will have a functioning government. That is possible. That's what I'm hoping for. But as of now, very hard to say. It's one thing is certain is if violence continues and more people are killed, Morsi's detractors and critics will definitely hold him accountable, and things will get more difficult. It's definitely within his interest to contain violence, to contain clashes. The problem now is, though, you have this large segment of Islamists and Morsi supporters who have been who saw the march on the recent march on the presidential palace. They saw that as extremely provocative, and really really wanted to hit the streets to support their elected president. So you can't control. And when you're talking about hundreds of thousands and even millions of people, it is very hard to control everybody. So, all it takes is sort of one, Molotov cocktail or something like that, or the death of a child or something like that, to really, really galvanize the other side. And then you've totally lost control. And then you've got dozens and then scores and then possibly hundreds of killed. And then the military steps in and you've got the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces running the show yet again.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, man, what the hell do I know? I'm in the middle of Texas on the other side of the planet. But at least from here, for the last almost 2 years now, it has seemed that, contrary to, the situation in a lot of the other places in the region, that the people of Egypt, they really have a chance at this, that they've actually have been really good at keeping the violence to an absolute minimum of...
Despite the nationwide withdrawal of police and this incredible security vacuum, it is definitely a testament to man's good nature how smooth things have been here. There hasn't been enormous spikes in crime. You haven't seen random violence and that sort of thing. This is a very good point. They have managed to hold it together up until now, despite the turbulence and despite the security vacuum.
So. I guess people, you're right, they can find reasons to fight and things like this can spiral out of control, but it seems like, they got to also understand the same thing that you said, that, hey, man, the future of the modicum of self-rule that you've won for yourselves is in jeopardy here, Don't right. make it, even if you're really pissed off, don't make it that much worse by letting it turn into massive violence,
Right. And what's really tragic is now you have large swaths of the population, increasing numbers of people who are basically looking at this and saying, this revolution wasn't worth it with all of this. Nothing's gotten better. Things are just getting more dangerous at this point. Maybe things were better under Mubarak. And that would be really, really tragic. And we also saw that when Ahmed Shafiq, who was Mubarak's last minister, was almost elected in presidential runoffs this summer. I mean, Morsi only narrowly defeated him by, I think, a million votes. So that would be the ultimate tragedy if after 2 years of all this, Egyptians or the majority of Egyptians just said, Mubarak sucked, but at least there was a modicum of stability with him, and that would be the worst possible outcome.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, man, I really appreciate having access to everything about this, Adam. It's always great.
Yeah, thanks. I wish I could give you stuff in sort of more, with more clarity. But again, it's really hard to get behind the truth of what's going on when temperatures are running so, so high and the scene is so, so politicized and polarized.
All right. Thanks very much, Adam.
Okay, Scott. Talk to you next time.
That's Adam Morrow, everybody, from Interpress Service. That's ipsnews.net. ipsnews.net. Just click on Middle East section there for the great Adam Morrow reporting live from Cairo. The Scott Horton Show is brought to you by the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org. Join the great Jacob Hornberger and some of the best writers in the libertarian movement like James Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more for a real individualist take
on the most important matters of peace, liberty, and prosperity in our society. That's the Future Freedom Foundation at FFF.org.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support The Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey everybody, Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. If you're like me, then you're right all the time, surrounded by people in desperate need of correction. Well, we can't all have a radio show, but we can all get anti-government propaganda to stick on the back of our trucks. Check out LibertyStickers.com. Categories include anti-war, empire, police state, libertarian, Ron Paul, gun rights, founders quotes, and of course, the stupid election. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Ben Franklin said those who are willing to sacrifice essential liberty for a little temporary safety deserve neither. Hi, Scott Horton here for the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's a playing card-sized steel Bill of Rights designed to set off the metal detectors anywhere the police state goes, so you can remind those around you the freedoms we've lost. And for a limited time, get free shipping when you purchase a frequent flyer pack of 5 Bill of Rights Security Edition cards. Play a leading role in the security theater with a Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com.